Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Chit Chat Cafe Live. The show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live, Lisa and Nancy.
Well, hi, everyone. It's great time for Chit Chat Cafe Live tonight. You know, we're always live here on Artist First World Radio Network. And tonight, we're so excited for the show. John Anderson, we hope, will join us later. We've had a little bit of technical difficulty. But right now, we're going on with the show. We're happy you joined us. Our first guest tonight is William C. Deere, a private investigator and author of the new book, O.J. is Innocent and I Can Prove It, The Shocking Truth About the Murders of Nicole Simpson and Rob Goldman. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Nancy.
Always busy with live radio. Corey, we appreciate your help, our producer as well.
Always have the little technical difficulties, but they all work out all the time.
It does. It's just always exciting. So let's get right to it.
Well, yeah, I found our first guest because I heard this, I think he was on one of my local radio stations, and I said, oh, I have to have him on and talk to him about this. Come on, how can O.J. be innocent? William, come on now.
All right, let's put it into your listeners. Number one is I got involved in this thing because on the 17th, the 5 days after the car chase scene, I was invited to speak to the International Council of Reporters and Editors, like Time and Newsweek, their annual conference. And after it was over, they said, what do you think about this car chase? And I said, oh, something concocted by O.J.'s lawyers. It'll go on for hours and hours, and he'll, you know, use that later to try and get off. My son said to me, he said, Dad, you're assuming he's guilty? And I said, well, look at the facts. And he said, yes, except for one thing. Every time you teach homicide to law enforcement, the first thing you have me put up is a sign that says, never assume and always verify. Well, in about 6 weeks, it's going to be 18 years I've been involved in this. 2 weeks after the murders happened, I flew out with one of my men, climbed over the back gate on Sunday night, approximately the same time frame that they claimed the murders occurred. I walked the walkway, climbed up the staircase, and sat at her front door and realized the picture window to the left, she could have seen who it was. In California, like a lot of places, you don't let anybody in for a stranger. When I sat down and looked at the surroundings, and I could see some blood still remaining at the scene from Goldman and from Nicole, and I also realized at that point that O.J. Simpson was at the crime scene but did not commit the murders. Now, 18 years later with this book, what I've done is every step that I've taken, you're taking. I filed everything under not hearsay, but a fact. I backed it up with entire facts. I wrote a book 11 years ago that said O.J.'s guilty but not of murder, and that was kind of like a fishing book because I wanted to end it, and only because LAPD wasn't interested, and it didn't seem like anybody else was at that point. But when it happened, all of a sudden I end up getting phone calls, and the phone calls brought me information that I felt was so important it took it from a lot of fact and theory to total fact. I have one man called me and said, Mr. Deere, I have what you need. What is it I need? I have your suspect, Jason Simpson's forged time card for the night of June 12th. And it shows that he checked in at 2:30, out at 10:30. But the big difference was that all our employees check in and out by a time card. His was handwritten in, which was a big red flag. And then I think it was about 3 days later, I get another call. I have what you need. What is it that I need? I have Jason Simpson's items that he put into a storage facility. Well, that has to be shocking in itself. Now, let me tell you what was in that storage facility. So when we looked in that box that was brought out to us by the individual who bought it at the public storage, we verified that it was rented under the name of Jason Simpson. And inside that storage, so just one box, that's all it was. In that box was his dog's ashes, a series of photographs, a football autographed by O.J., a jacket. But then the photographs that we looked through, all of a sudden, there was a picture that was so important to us. And it was a picture of our suspect in bed with his dog. Now, and he was wearing the knit cap. We blew it up, and it looked exactly like the cap that had been found at the Bundy crime scene. Then we started looking at our suspect, where we had cleared earlier. But now, knowing that he was in bed with his dog, he wore the knit cap, we found other items, diaries. What he talks about, this is the year of the knife for me. I cut away my problems with a knife. I'm tired of being Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. A lady came forward who dated him and said that he had chopped off all her hair with a chef's knife and threw in a tub of water that had no water in it. Another one came out with an article where he tried to choke her, and the only thing that he was that saved her was two people came up and tried to restrain him. We found the records indicating that he checked into Cedars-Sinai Hospital just weeks prior to the murders and told the attending physician, "I'm out of my medication, Depakote, and about to rage." Now, we know this was a rage killing by an amateur, and it was established early on by Marsha Clark and Hodgman. What a lot of your listeners may not know is that our suspect was actually on probation at the time for assaulting his previous employer with a knife. And what did we find at the bottom of the box? A knife in a sheath. We pulled it out and saw the initial scratched in JS. We took the knife to a Gerber rep of 35 years, and he said to us, "This is a replica of our Gerber Mark I, designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to hunt and to kill." And we looked at it thoroughly, and he showed us where the top had been removed, wax had been poured in, and it had a jagged metal edge at the top. We then took it to some of the top medical examiners, one in particular who wrote the book Knife and Gunshot Wounds. He compared it to the laceration on Nicole Simpson's skull, and it matched perfectly. He then decided because it was a double-bladed knife, he had other people examine it, and based on their findings, they felt in all probability this was the murder weapon that killed Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. And that was just our beginning into what we describe as my 18-year search for the truth and closure in the murders of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman.
What got you so fascinated with this to begin with?
Because of the fact that I'd made that statement. That way I felt some obligation. If I was going to make a statement in front of all these people, I should back it up. A lot of people don't realize this, but on the night of June 12th, our suspect was supposed to be cooking a dinner for 13 people after the recital with Sydney had at the, that around lunchtime. Well, the problem was that our suspect was preparing dinner, but none of the 13 showed up because instead Nicole ended up at Messalina Restaurant, which a lot of us know. The fact that the glasses were left there by Judith, which was Nicole's mother, and that Ron Goldman was going to bring the glasses by at her residence. Well, again, when you look at it and you understand, this is a rage killing by an amateur. We have the fact he was out of his medication about to rage weeks prior to that. We talked to another lady who had dated him and said 2 weeks prior to the murders, she talked with him and he said, "I'm not taking that medicine anymore. It makes me sick." Well, if you know what bipolar is and you know what intermittent rage disorder is, and when you look at the prescription bottles that said Jason Lamar Simpson, "Do not drink," and again, 2 500 milligrams per day to control your bipolar and rage disorder, certainly should have rose some aspects of a possible suspect in this case. But again, that's just a few of the red flags that we've been able to put together in this case.
Hmm. Wow. Did you ever meet Nicole Brown Simpson or O.J. Simpson in person?
No, I had an opportunity to do that. I chose not to because I felt if I'm going to do this investigation on my own nickel, and because I got entrapped into this thing originally, I felt that it was only fair for me not to meet any of those people and to do my investigation. A lot of people don't know this, but you got to understand that O.J. had two marriages. One was by his first wife, which was Marguerite, and as a result of that, he had three children, Arnell, and then Jason, and little Aaron, who was 23 months old when she drowned at the pool at Rockingham, where our suspect was supposed to be watching her. One of the former police officers met with me and told me that he'd gotten a call from Nicole when she lived on Gretna Green, which is one street behind Bundy, and he went over there immediately and looked around, and then when he got up there, she said, "You know, I don't think it was O.J., I think it was Jason." Now, Jason was 24 at the time, 5'11", 235, and again, like I've said, on probation for assaulting his previous employer with a knife. We actually have in our crime lab here at my ranch all the series of photographs, plus we have Jason's vehicle. We have in that box, in addition to that, his dog's ashes. When you go through all that, and then you look at what his diaries say, in the book I've tried to cover every aspect I can. Naturally, we can't print the entire diaries. But in 91, 92, and 93, I assure you, it's shocking. The same way the pair of socks found at the foot of O.J.'s bed. When those socks were checked, it was found that the socks did contain blood from O.J. and from the coal. But when it was checked further, the blood that was on those socks went from side to side, which meant there was no foot in it. But most importantly, it was containing in the blood EDTA. Now, remember when O.J. came back from Chicago, he arrived at Rockingham, they took him into custody. He volunteered to go with Van Etter and Lang down to the Sheriff's Police Department and to the jail where they stripped him and they photographed him. The only marks he had was a cut on his left knuckle. We met Thanel Paritis, jail nurse of 38 years, one of the nicest men you'll ever meet. And he said to me, "Mr. Deere, I was told to draw blood from O.J." I did. I drew 8 cc's of blood. Van Etter asked me for the blood in the vial. I shook it before I handed it to him, which is out of protocol. Normally, I send it over to the crime lab. But when Van Etter took it in that night, there was only 6.5. Dr. Frederick Reeder, who the FBI has used numerous times in the past, said before he passed away that the blood on the socks had to come from a vial of blood. Now, I'm just giving you just a little bit of what we have as far as our red flags. That certainly should have been a red flag at the time for the LAPD, but they never have interviewed Jason Lamar Simpson either at that time or now nearly 18 years later. That ought to give some of your listeners a great concern when all of a sudden, you know, you see O.J. The same thing as we know now that O.J.'s, as a lot of your listeners probably know, he's in prison in Nevada for so-called robbery. Well, I'm not a fan of O.J.'s. I've never met him, but I believe that truth and justice should prevail. I've been working homicides. I did the Kennedy assassination. I was exhumed Lee Harvey Oswald's body. I hold the world's record, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, and I'm certainly not going to make any money out of this book, but I believe justice should prevail for the families of Nicole and Goldman. But when you look at all the things that we have uncovered, even on the cover of the book, Dan Rather says, this needs to be looked into further with what I've uncovered. Dr. Al Harper, Dr. Henry Lee, Dr. Vincent DeMaio, Dr. Harvey Davidson, Dr. Jim Cron. It goes on and on with these experts who believe that we have uncovered facts that have never been obtained before. We've tried to confront the Los Angeles Police Department. They don't care and are not interested. You can probably think about why. The same way that O.J.'s in prison in Nevada. The man who set him up, he's admitted he made over $100,000. He admitted he put the microphones in the room. He admitted he went down and got O.J. to come up. And yet the judge gave back to O.J. the items that he took that belonged to him, I think about 2 years ago. But O.J. stays in prison for the next 7 to 33 years, so he'll probably die in prison. And that's sad.
Well, it is sad. And getting back to the people that you just mentioned, my question is about Dr. Vincent DeMaio.
Yes.
You know, he's the author of Forensic Pathology and Gunshot and Knife Wounds.
Yes.
In your book, you mention about the knife. Are you in possession of that knife
yes.
now?
Yes. I'm sitting here looking at it right now because we're doing a film tomorrow. We've kept it locked up in a safe. We have the knife. We have the diaries, the original diaries. We have the vehicle. Yes, Dr. DeMaio examined the knife from one end to the other. And that's when he made his decision that as far as he was concerned, in all probability, this was the knife used in the murder.
Okay. And also, I was very impressed with your meeting with Dr. Henry Lee in your book.
Well, let me tell you something happened in that, Nancy. There were 533 people at the Markle Symposium, and I was invited to be one of the speakers. Now, the Markle Symposium at that time consisted of law enforcement, prosecutors, public defenders, and criminal justice majors. When I got up to make my speech, I asked how many of you believe in this room that O.J. Simpson's guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt. All 533, in some cases, two hands went up. He was guilty. When I finished, I think it was about 75 minutes later, I asked again the same questions. Nobody except for three people raised their hands as far as guilty. I then went directly to them with the microphone and the camera. Why do you believe that? Because it's hard for us to believe that this could happen to the police department. Keep in mind, I'm a pro policeman. I've been inducted in the Police Officers Hall of Fame as a private investigator for the Milo murders up in Akron, Ohio. And I'm very proud of that. But we all make mistakes. when you see the rush to judgment in this case, you know, and this is what happened. The glove found at Bundy. The glove found at Rockingham. That, all of a sudden, hey, O.J. did it. Climbed over the back gate, and next thing you know, we all know what happened. You know what, 100 million people across the United States and foreign countries got to watch the so-called car chase scene, and I promise you, there's no doubt in my mind, O.J. was at the crime scene, but did not commit the murder. If your listeners have any questions, I am more than glad to answer them.
Well, your book is amazing. And real quickly, are you able to describe the juror's ballot? You have information about it in your book.
Yes, at the very back of the book, what I've tried to do, as I said earlier, I wanted everybody to read the book as if O.J. Simpson is guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt. Read all that you're following me. In other words, you're taking over the position that I'm taking. You're now the investigator. Every step I take, it's now you taking it. At the back of the book, and you followed all the evidence that's in the book, and it's all documented. Then at the back of the book, there's a ballot. And the ballot then, you then fill it out. Do you believe, based on what you've seen in this book and read in this book and verified in this book, do you believe that O.J. Simpson is still guilty? Do you believe he's not guilty? Do you believe that he's been subbing for somebody else? Let me share with you something else. O.J. Simpson did fail a polygraph test. He failed it by a minus 22 or 23, which is about as bad as you're going to fail it. But when I interviewed some of the top polygraph examiners in the country, if O.J. Simpson had gone to the scene or he had knowledge of who committed the murder, there is no way he could have passed that polygraph test. And that's been verified by a number of polygraph examiners.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for sharing your book with all of us.
Well, I hope they'll get a chance to read it. They can go on eBooks and get it. They can go to Barnes & Noble. I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, if anybody tries to say, I've made a dollar out of this, try putting 18 years of your life and your money into something that you truly, truly, truly believe in. And I believe in justice, and I certainly believe in this particular case. And I think if it's looked at properly, then I think closure will finally come to Nicole Simpson's family.
Well, I think it's a wonderful book. You sent it to us, and we really enjoyed it, and you're fabulous. You are to be commended not only on your police work and your investigative work, but for this book and bringing everything to light as well.
Well, thank you for having me on tonight. I appreciate it, and look forward to visiting with you again some other time.
Yeah, especially.
You can tell us about your other detective work, because I'm sure you have cool stories.
Oh, I've got a few I can share with you, so if you call me sometime, we'll be glad to share them with you. I can tell you about the exhumation of Lee Harvey Oswald and things like that.
That's what I want to hear.
So, but if you have any questions or want me on again, just give me a call.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Thank you.
Well, that was interesting.
Very interesting. The book is big, but it's very interesting, and it'll hold your attention through the entire book. Well, we are taking a quick commercial break. Stay with us. John Anderson, the voice from Yes, is coming on our show live. Stay with us.
And now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We are very honored and proud to have John Anderson. For all of us who love the songs, I've Seen All Good People, Roundabout, Owner of a Lonely Heart, we are honored to present John Anderson, one of the most recognizable voices in progressive rock, as the lead vocalist and creative force behind Yes. He's currently on tour performing classic Yes and his own creative work. Welcome, John Anderson.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm thrilled. This is great to talk to you. I can tell you, I have fond memories of attending your Yes concert in Philly years ago, and I'm overjoyed to speak with you.
I remember you.
You do? Thank you. And Lisa, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I loved your songs.
Thank you so much.
Well, as the lead vocalist and creative force behind the iconic band, Yes, you created, complex pieces that we all remember, Close to the Edge and Awaken.
Woo!
Yeah. Hey, is making music now the same as making music in the 70s and 80s?
Well, of course it's different because I'm not with the group anymore, but music is still music is music, and I'm still very interested in long-form pieces of music. It's like a musical journey to create, so I just love doing it.
Well, that is exciting. Well, you co-authored Yes's biggest hits, including some of my favorites. I've mentioned I've Seen All Good People and Roundabout and Owner of a Lonely Heart. What came first with you when you were creating the music, the words or the tune?
It was always, I think it was always the melody. You know, I'd be sitting with Steve Howe, the guitar player, in the back of the van. When we did Roundabout, we were traveling from Aberdeen to Glasgow. This is in Scotland. And he'd be in the back of the van playing these chords, and I'd start singing. And there were so many roundabouts on the way down from Aberdeen to Glasgow. And then you go past these beautiful mountains that you don't see the top of the mountains. You just see the clouds at the top, and it's just like the mountains are coming out of the sky. And you write this down, and then you go around Loch Lomond, and you go around these lakes, in and around the lake. And that's how the song came together.
Oh, I can just picture it. It's beautiful over there. Well, we loved Roundabout. Well, I also love it when you sing, She Loves You, Yeah, 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 at the end of Time Is Now, and It's Right for Me.
Taking I love it. Back. Well, you know, yeah.
You know, when you were with your brother playing with the Warriors, is that
I
when
know.
You started?
I know. We actually went to see the Beatles just before they became famous. This is like very early April 1963. And me and my brother had a band called the Warriors. And we saw the Beatles. Nobody screamed. Everybody listened. And they were just amazing. And probably, I think, November of 1963, me and my brother in our band, we played at the Cavern in Liverpool. So we started right at the beginning of that sort of change of the world in musical form.
Well, there was fun songs, and I liked it how you had that, She Loves You, Yeah, 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 at the end of Is It Time Is Now and It's Right for Me?
Yeah, I love singing it.
Yeah, we'd like to hear it. Hey, do you want to sing a little bit now?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's
up.
Okay.
No,
no
I just
problem.
Woke up.
Oh, did you? All right.
Yeah. Well, I was having my afternoon nap.
That's fabulous. Well, I have a fun story to share with you. I actually wore out all of my Yes albums, the Yes songs and Fragile, playing them morning, noon, and night, and had to go and buy new albums twice.
Excellent. I love
I
that.
I loved that every day. I would play it. I wore them out. How long did it take you to write Roundabout?
Well, we wrote it down. You know, we actually did a sketch of it when we were coming down from Aberdeen to Glasgow, as I mentioned earlier. And then the following week, we were in the studio. And it probably took us 2 days to put that piece of music together and record it.
Well, it's just a wonderful, wonderful song. Well, how old were you when you started to play guitar?
Well, it's amazing that I really didn't start playing guitar until I was 25, very late in life. And But I play the guitar every day now, so I'm making up.
That's good. Well, you've been admired for taking simple ideas and creating songs and music that have changed our lives. And your words just touch our souls in the simplest matter. I love the words, take a straight and stronger course. What are some of your favorite songs over the years that you've created?
Oh, gosh. When I look back, I can't believe that I've been involved in so much music over the years. And, you know, I always think the new songs that I'm writing are the best ones. You always do, or else you wouldn't do them. I'm actually singing a song at the moment today, and this is a song about the Star Nation, the ancient ones, the ones that are going to bring peace to this wonderful earth that we live in, and that's what I'm singing about today. So I'm just happy to do my songs and write lyrics, and I just love everything that I've done.
Well, all of your music is just amazing. You co-founded the band Yes in 1968 with bassist Chris Squire, singing on every album with the exception of the 1980s Drama. Can you tell us about that time in your life and the departure from Yes?
Well, when I started with the band, I was working in a club just above the Marquee Club, which is a very famous club where Jimi Hendrix played and The Who, Keith Emerson, and all these great musicians played in the club. And I worked in the bar upstairs, and that's where I met Chris Squire. And, you know, we were very lucky to get success and continue for so long. You know, you work with somebody for such a long time. 10 years we were on the road and recording. And then I left the band for a couple of years because I was just so tired of touring. It was driving me crazy. And then 90125 happened. And I started up again, and 10 years later, I got crazy again. I had to leave. And that's the way it is. You know, some people, you know, can go on the road forever, but sometimes, as a group, it's sometimes very hard to do, you know?
Tell us what else you do. You're touring now, aren't you? You do tours?
Well, I've just been touring the East Coast of America, and then I've been doing some shows down in Texas and Vegas, and I'm having a break now. I'm in my studio where I live in Central California, and we live in the hills, just me and my beautiful wife, Jane, and I'm singing and writing songs at the moment, and then I go back on tour in June to Chicago and Milwaukee, and then I do some West Coast shows. So, and then July, I'll have off, another month off doing some work in my studio. And then August, I go to London at the Olympic Games. I'm doing a performance there with the Slovakian Orchestra.
Olympics, now that's really exciting. Wow.
Yeah, I got to keep busy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what does John Anderson do in his free time?
Exactly. I usually go in my studio.
I know another thing you like to do. You like to listen to Jon Stewart in The Daily Show.
Oh, Jon Stewart is just the best, as we all know. He's so, the last couple of weeks, especially night before last, he just made me laugh so much. Nobody wants to be vice president. It's too funny. It was all about Mitt Romney, you know.
Well, what are you going to be doing at the Olympics? You're going to be performing at the Olympics in the Olympic Village, or
yeah, it's a concert
in time?
No, it's a concert in London with the Slovakian Chamber Orchestra. We're playing at Sadler's Wells, which is one of the most beautiful theaters in London. It's to celebrate Slovakia being at the Olympic Games, and because I worked with the orchestra before a couple of years ago when they were celebrating the end of the Russian Revolution and how the Russians had to get out of town 20 years ago, and they wanted me to come and sing Close to the Edge, of all things, which I did.
Oh, wow. Cool. Now, where are you from? You're from Scotland?
No, my dad's from Scotland. I'm from just the north of Manchester.
In England?
In England, yeah. My mother was Irish, and
okay.
I'm very, very Celtic. You know, I love that energy.
Yeah, I love Celtic people. They're so loving and warm, and you just want to hug them.
Yes, sirree.
I have to tell you, this is such an honor to have you on the show. My brother was freaking out when he heard we were having John Anderson on the show. He goes, oh, my God, I can't believe it. You're so lucky.
Well, Lisa, let's have him say hello to your brother.
Yeah, say hello to David. Say hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave. How you doing, Dave? Love you, Dave.
Tell us about your recorded four celebrated albums with the Oscar winner, Vangelis.
Well, Vangelis was a wonderful guy who came into my life. He lived in Paris, and I got his phone number, and I went to Paris to meet him because I'd heard his first record. And he was one of the first keyboard players. And I remember phoning him up and saying, hello, Vangelis.
Hello.
Vangelis.
Yes, what do you want?
Well, I'm a singer in a band called Yes.
What's Yes? I don't know Yes.
I said, it's a band. I'm a singer. Oh, come over. You're a singer. Come. So I got over to his apartment, and we became instant friends, and we put together, I think, four of the most wonderful albums in my career. I just love the music with Vangelis.
And so did we read somewhere that if you had the chance to play with him again, you'd be on the first plane?
I would be on the first plane. I sure would.
That's exciting.
Yeah, he's like a brother, you know.
Yeah, wonderful. Do you have children?
I certainly do. I have three children, and they're all grown up. I just spoke to my son, Damien. He's working he has a beautiful studio in the country in England, and he's writing a lot of music. We've been writing some songs together, actually, this year. And he's 40 years old this year. And my eldest daughter is Deborah. She's 42, and she's a wonderful, wonderful photographer. She just finished her first movie. And she's gone for a relaxing 3 weeks in Costa Rica, having a break.
Oh, wow.
And my youngest daughter is Jade, and she's 32, and she's having a baby.
Oh, will this be your first grandchild?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I'm so happy.
What will you be called?
Granddad.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited.
What are some of your
I love cooking. I cook every day. I love cooking and taking care of my honey, my wife, and making breakfast in bed and massaging.
Yeah,
I love
like
doing
a romantic,
massage.
You're a romantic guy.
Sure am. And I love painting. I really do. I have some canvases that I must start next week, but I was painting a couple of months ago, and it's just a lovely, relaxing thing to do.
And what's your specialty for cooking?
Gosh, I like doing pasta. I like doing turkey burgers. I like doing coq au vin, which is a French, like you throw a chicken in for 5 hours with a bottle of wine. You can't go wrong with that. You know, fish. I like doing special dishes, you know, that I learned along the way.
Well, that's exciting. Well, we were reading an article by Rolling Stones in their music section. Oh, it was a fabulous article on you. And you were quoted as saying, if you got together again with Yes, you'd give each other a big hug and let bygones be bygones. Do you ever consider a reunion tour with them?
I dream about it all the time. I really, it's funny. You know, they like to be on the tour all the time and stuff. And, you know, I got very ill a couple of years ago, 3 years ago now. Well, 4 years. Of course, it's 4 years ago. And I got very much better after a year of being very sick. And then they just carried on and found somebody else to sing in the band. And it made me feel pretty sad, but I thought, okay, I got to get on with my career, and I'll start doing solo shows. But at the back of my mind, I was always thinking, one day we'll get back together, and the fans will be happy, and we'll all be happy, and life will be good, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's that about your new?
Sorry,
your new work.
I was going to say, I think, sorry?
Tell us about your new CD.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I was trying to say, and then this is live radio.
It is.
I have an album that's out. It's called Survival and Other Stories. And that was out late last year. And on my birthday, 25th of October, I released a 20-minute piece of music called Open, which you can listen to on... in fact, you can hear it on YouTube. Somebody put it up there. But you can download it if you want to on iTunes. And I just released a song with an Italian composer called Marco Sabeu. And I actually did a video for him so he can show me singing on stage when he does his live shows in Italy. And I'm working on a new album now. So life is good.
And you've done digital work of Open, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Let me ask you something, John. If you weren't a singer, what would you do? What would have been your career, do you think?
Well, I wanted to play football, you know, soccer. I wanted to play so much when I was growing up. I was very interested in playing for England as a soccer player. I think a lot of rock and roll singers like... you know, want to be soccer players, and a lot of soccer players want to be rock and roll singers, actually. So, you know, Rod Stewart always wanted to be a soccer player, you know?
Exactly. Now, I've read a lot of articles that say that there's a misconception that you sing falsetto.
Well, I've got a high voice, as you can tell.
Right.
You know, every time I go on the phone... there's always people saying, yes, ma'am, can I help you, ma'am?
No.
Well, yeah.
Your normal singing voice is, if I read it correctly, it's naturally above the tenor range. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful tenor voice. Oh, you're going to sing for us?
She loves you, yeah.
Woo! Oh, we love it. That is wonderful. Thank you, John.
Mm-mm.
And so where do you go next on tour?
Well, the next shows will be around Chicago at the beginning of June and Milwaukee. And then we go over to Seattle and I think Portland. And then we're going to actually play just north of San Francisco in Napa Valley where the wine country is.
That's going to be nice.
Shows there.
Well, way back in the day, where were you and what's your memory about meeting bassist Chris Squire in March of 1968?
Well, I was working in the bar. I mentioned it earlier. I was cleaning up. People used to come into that bar. You wouldn't believe the rock and roll stars that would come in the bar because it was above this very famous club called the Marquee Club. And it was about 6 o'clock in the evening. I came to work, and I was tidying up and putting glasses away and stacking bottles of beer behind the counter. And the guy that ran the bar said, there's Chris Squire down the end of the bar. He looks very lonely. Why don't you go and say hello? So I wandered down and said, hi, Chris. How you doing? And we talked about music, and the album we liked at that time was Simon and Garfunkel album. So we talked about that. And there was another album that we liked, songs by Jimmy Webb, and it was an album by the Fifth Dimension. And we just loved the same kind of music. And he had a band called Mabel Greer's Toy Shop. And I went the following day to hear them rehearse, and I started singing with them. And then I think the drummer left to go to Paris to work with another band, and the keyboard player left that week. And so we added a couple of other people, and I kept saying to Chris, you know, Mabel Greer's Toy Shop is such a long name for a band. Can we not call it something short and sweet? And that's when Yes came in, you know, the name of Yes came.
That's a great story.
Well, it's very mystical that we had no money, of course, in those days, and we were in a bar, and back in the bar about a week later, we were in the bar, and I was complaining to the guys, we need some money. We've got to get some money. And the guy next to me said, what do you want? How much money do you want? And I said, well, about $1,000, £500 in those days. That would get us on the road. And he said, I'll give you a check on Monday. guy just out of the blue said he would do it.
Oh, do people these days, do they send you music to listen to?
Well, I work with people all over the world by the internet. It's part of what I like to do. So I get music every day, and if I like it, I'll sing something. You know, it's just one of the things that I like to do.
Okay, so then if you listen to their music and you like it, you'll sing their song?
Well, it's not what I do. I'll sing a melody and a lyric and send it back to them. And I always say, just send me music. Don't send me tunes, because I'd rather make up my own melody. It's just the way I am, you know. And then I'll write a lyric, and then I'll send it to them. And usually it works. In fact, my last album, which is called Survival, every song is working with people from around the world. There's one with a young guy from Holland who plays beautiful guitar. Another song with a guy from Italy, another guy from Australia. A couple of songs with a guy who does the music for South Park. And, you know, you meet these people via the internet. It's kind of cool.
We know all about that, right, Lisa?
Oh, yeah.
That is good.
I've met more than my share of people on the internet.
How often do you rehearse now, John?
Well, I'm singing every day, so I'm rehearsing. You know, I was actually rehearsing a new song for my show today, and I was also rehearsing an old song from the last Yes album, which I really like. I want to put that into the show. I was doing that today.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, we can't thank you enough for being our guest tonight. It's our honor. Pleasure. We're so excited.
Yeah, very much honored. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
If you get time, there's a girl, I think it's a group, it's just two girls or one girl. It's called, what's it called? First Aid Kit. And I heard them for the first time yesterday. Somebody sent me a link. First Aid Kit. Oh, boy.
Okay.
Does this girl sing beautiful? And she sings great, and they make great videos, and the lyrics are just so beautiful. I can't tell you.
We're going to Google them and look into them. Thank you very much, John.
Excellent.
Well, we're going to take all of our memories of all your fabulous music and play them all over again. We are going to leave with your new song.
Excellent.
Lots of Love? Yes.
Yeah.
So we're going to play that now for our listeners. John Anderson from Yes and Solo Work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Have a nice summer. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, everyone, we're going to take a moment to play John's song. Lisa, would you like to do that or in a minute?
We can do it in a minute.
All right. Well, we're going to play
really
that
exciting.
When we close our show.
Yes. That was very, very cool that we got to talk to him.
Exactly.
I'm very honored that he took the time to come on our show. Very much so. Appreciate it. So, you want to do our product of the week?
You go first.
Well, my product this week, I'm very into having my under eye wrinkles. They bother me. So, and my daughters always tell me I look dry. So I'm always trying new things. So I tried this new, it's Oil Volay Regenerist, and it has concealer in it. Comes in a little tube. It's about $22. So I tried that, and I like it. I put it around my eye. I put regular concealer on anyway, but I put this on because it's almost like an eye cream that you can put on top of your foundation so that you don't look all dry. You look a little more moist and dewy when you're, you know, once your face is all made up.
Right.
So it's a Regenerist concealer with eye cream with concealer.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. It's a tube. I thought it was a roller when I first bought it, but when I got home, it was a tube. But I like it.
Well, my product is another book. It's by an author that I really enjoy her work, Mary Ann Williamson. The book I'm reading right now is called The Age of Miracles, Embracing Your Life. And it's just filled with all types of quotes and fun advice. And it's very uplifting. It's a quick read. You can read it actually probably in an hour. It's just a beautiful little book. And Marianne Williamson is a best-selling author. It would be fun to have her on the show sometime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we should definitely try to get her.
Well, what a thrill tonight to have these fabulous guests.
Yep.
And it was just wonderful. We're thanking our fabulous sponsor, St. Corey Orthopedics, and also Corey King. He's working hard tonight. Thank you, Corey. You can enjoy the Corey King Show live every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Artists First.
And don't forget to listen to our archives. Go to our website, scroll down to the page to the show that you'd like to listen to, click the date, and just enjoy some of our past shows. We had on Joan London, and we had on Priscilla Presley, and we had on Mario Andretti. We had some really cool guests, so enjoy them.
And as we leave, we're going to play John Anderson's brand new song, Lots of Love. Enjoy, and good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
To see.